Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to the middle of the week. Welcome to the day that we start the whole thing with the camel. Play it, man.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Yes, it is. It is hump day. Welcome to hump day. Congratulations. You are halfway to the end of the week. We're going to get you all the way there. We got a great show laid on for you today. Before I do anything, though, that is JP pushing buttons on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. I'm not liking this cold weather, though. It's annoying.
Come on. It's not cold.
I don't like it.
It's not even cold.
Well, I mean, 33 in the morning is pretty cold to me, I'll say.
Anyway, nonetheless, good show laid on for you. We got the Grand Council at 4 o'clock today with Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. Looking forward to that. Not like there's not any news going on right now, so we'll have plenty to talk about with the Grand Council at 4 o'clock. And then a triple dipper par excellence. Hit the button, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. I mean, so first one, look, did you know, by the way, that Birmingham, Alabama, years of being known as the Magic City, I'm saying that it may be more and more becoming the Tragic City. And I say that because the crime rate in Birmingham is escalating still to this day, despite the fact that the mayor and the council have known for over a year that Birmingham was ranked as one of the deadliest cities in the nation. We're going to talk about that. Number one, Triple Dipper, Magic City equals Tragic City. That's the name of it. Number two, oh, geez, DEI. DEI, for the love, make it stop. There is some madness in DEI world. I'll bring it out for you. Lay it out so you can see it. I mean, it's, you can imagine, but then again, when you still see it, you're like, how's that even happening? But DEI, make it stop now. That's what I'm calling Dipper number two for the day. And then number three, I didn't get to it yesterday. The plan is to get to it today. Lead from the front. Have you noticed the fact that there are world leaders responding to the Trump administration and he's not even been sworn in yet? You know why? Because he's leading from the front. That's why. He's out there making waves. He's heading to France right now for an overseas junket. I mean, literally, the guy is already acting like he's in office, and I'm loving it. And he's leading from the front. That's number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue. As always, I'll remind you guys that the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue is attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. You can hear more about him in just a minute. So let me jump on in. And I'll start by saying that, so last night, Charlene and I were talking about all of this. Like, how did I get into radio? How did this happen? I mean, how did radio, which almost seemed like it was an accident, how did it turn into a media company with podcasts and syndication and written op-eds to get published? I mean, this is crazy. And I'm not going to lie, some of our discussion actually centered on the fact that it's also not always been easy, not by any stretch. And that reminded me of a life lesson from a few years ago, a very real, very memorable, very personal story that I'm going to tell you here in just a minute. It's a life lesson that I learned, like I said, years ago while I was in the swamps at Army Ranger School. It deals with the why of the fact that I'm now doing radio, because the why is always the most important part. I mean, the how is key, certainly, the what is important, but the why, if you don't know the why of what you do, then nothing else ever really lines up. Before I do that, though, let me lay the foundation. So many of you remember Boomer's voice being on the air with me all the time. He's a great friend. I've known his family for years. Boomer did an amazing job here running the board before JP joined us, kept all the tech around here straight. Well, his family, his folks, have been there for us many times. They are dear friends of ours. They're some of the people who we've actually sought out for prayer and counsel more than once. But there was one particular day that Charlene and I were having dinner at a local barbecue place with Boomer's parents. And his dad asked me for some advice or some insights regarding a decision he was in the middle of. And it reminded me of a personal story, and so I told him. And then it dawned on me as I related my story to him to get to the point, I realized the conversation we were having, his question, my answer, was as much for me at the time as it was for him. It was a moment that God sort of brought that whole lesson that I'm about to tell you about back to mind, and it hasn't left me since. So why do we do what we do? And can we even get it done? What is our calling in the midst of what we are supposed to be doing? So here's the backstory. In 1991, back when I was young and full of vinegar, I got orders to go to Army Ranger School. I was in my 20s. It was a dream for me. Ranger School was a dream for me, a true bucket list item. I wanted to wear that Ranger tab on my left shoulder so bad I could hardly stand it. So as a young lieutenant, I won the right to go and took off for the Ranger Training Brigade headquarters at Fort Benning, Georgia. I mean, I could write a book about what to do, and most of it would actually be on what not to do. Back when I went through the course, there were actually still four phases. There's not now. Several weeks at the Benning phase where they weed you out, wear you out, train you in hand-to-hand combat and small unit tactics, and they validate your individual soldier skills. Then came the mountain phase in North Georgia where I got frostbite on my toes. Then to the swamps in North Florida where my frostbite turned to trench foot. Then out to the deserts in Utah, which was equally crazy. Every phase had its own specific training, its own epic level of challenges. But what most folks don't know is that Ranger School, while it is certainly a skill and knowledge-heavy school, it's an endurance test, really, of the highest order. But Ranger School is primarily considered to be a leadership course. And to graduate, you have to successfully lead a series of missions in various environments. So to add to my fun and enjoyment, it was winter. January, to be exact. 450 people tried to enter my course on day one. 250 made it past day one. Only 98 are in my graduation photo. But at one point in the swamps of Florida, y'all, I was exhausted to the point of hallucination. I was. But I was also in charge of an ambush patrol. And none of my guys could function. I believe it was a platoon-level operation, and none of my guys could function. Dudes would literally fall asleep standing up while I was briefing them. Nothing was working. And I realized I was about to fail the mission. I wasn't even sure we could start the mission. And I thought to myself in the early hours of that cold, wet dawn in the swamps that I was about to fail Ranger School after all I'd been through. So I remember distinctly, and here's the lesson part. I was standing there feeling miserable, out of control, unsure of what else I could do. And I just talked to God for like 3 seconds. I mean, literally. It was a 3-second, one-sided sort of kind of prayer. I suppose it could be categorized as a prayer, but it was really just me conversing with him, straight up. No flowery language, no opening lines, no amen. I remember saying, maybe even out loud, here's what I said. I remember saying distinctly, well, God, if you want me to be a ranger, then I will. And if you don't, I'll go home and I'll be proud of that too. What happened next is more than I can describe, really. There's no way I'm going to do it justice. It was one of the most profound experiences of my entire life. And when I say that, I am not saying it lightly, because right after I said that little 3-second sort of prayer, I suddenly had the biggest wave of relief wash over me like I've never felt before or since. It felt like somebody poured warm water over my head. I literally warmed up. It was in the winter, in the wet swamps. I felt actual heat wash down over me. It started at the top of my head. It worked its way down to my toes. I went from freezing and miserable to warm and relieved in a matter of seconds. I think I even chuckled out loud, which probably made some of the guys who were still awake think that I'd lost it. But it didn't stop there. It wasn't just the relief, because all of a sudden, everything came online. All of a sudden, guys got energy and alertness that they didn't have before. And my men, they rucked up, they locked and loaded, and we hit our start time. We laid on the ambush site for a perfectly executed set of actions on the objective. And the long story short of it is, yes, I passed the swamp phase, I went on and passed the desert phase, and Charlene came to Fort Benning and pinned my ranger tab on my arm. My point in that story, and what I told Boomer's dad that night at dinner, and what I'm reminded of once again, is that I learned at that moment, in that 3-second talk with God, what it means to cease striving and know that He is God. If He opened a door, then my scratching, clawing, fretting, ducking, and diving is making a situation more difficult than it had to be. Sometimes my role in the opportunities presented by God, I really believe, is just to do. Just to do. I love the Message paraphrase of the Bible. Sometimes it makes the grand language of the word come to life, and one of my favorite examples of that is Ephesians 2:10. In the Message translation, Ephesians 2:10 says this. It says, "He creates each one of us by Christ Jesus to join him in the work that he does, the good work he has gotten ready for us to do, work that we had better be doing." I mean, think about that. Work that he has gotten ready for us to do. Now, I'll be candid, and I'll note that I'm not always good at that. I mean, if you haven't noticed, I'm a type A personality. I don't sit still very well. I'm prone to saying trite things like sleep is highly overrated or scars are just symbols of an active lifestyle. Me personally, I'd rather be a sheepdog than a sheep any day. But there's times when I have to recognize that God's intent is even more than what I think it is. I mean, I went to Ranger School to be an Army Ranger. I came away as an Army Ranger, yes, but with life lessons about my own limitations, my own abilities. But more than anything, I came away with a better appreciation for the fact that I serve a big God who sometimes swings open a door and all he says to me is just do. And that, my friends, is why at this stage in my life, with every reason not to do so, I'm hosting a daily radio show. It's not because I sought an opportunity to spend hours preparing so I could spend hours talking. It's not because I thought there was some cool factor, but because an opportunity dropped into place, and after much prayer and deliberation, I realized my role was just to do. Just to do. If God wanted me to be a ranger, then I would. And if he didn't, then I'd go home and be proud of that too. If God wanted me to be a radio guy, then I would. And if he didn't, then I'd go home and be proud of that too. My impression is he's not done here. Right Side Radio has already become Right Side Media. Radio has grown to podcasts. More are coming. One station became several stations. Written ideas became published op-eds. I don't even know where it's all going. And I really wish it would be easy. Personally, I wish it would. But I know that this is where he's placed me. Then I'll do it. And I'll be proud of that too. So my role, my mission, my reason for doing it, the why, is because God gave it to me to do. Sometimes our job is just to do. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, that story, I realized at that particular moment when I said, God, if you want me to be a ranger, I will. And if you don't, then I'll go home and be proud of that too. That was the moment when I realized later I gave it away to him, so he gave it back. I'm just telling you, there's times when the doing is as much the calling as anything. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, by the way, the Right Side Way monologue, as I said earlier, every day brought to you now by attorney Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm in Huntsville of Wilmer and Lee. So, yeah, Stan McDonald's been a 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama, and he will not only advocate for your legal needs and rights, but he's been an absolute warrior for causes that are near and dear to the whole Right Side Ruffian community. I mean, he's been a ruffian longer than we've had ruffian status. But attorney Stan McDonald has represented his clients in like literally thousands of real estate transactions over the years. He knows how to represent you in court, in federal, state, local courts. When Stan McDonald's on your side, basically you have no greater friend, and likewise, your adversaries will have no greater foe. So attorney Stan McDonald, I know him personally. I think the world of him. His law firm is Wilmer and Lee. He's an American First family man, an attorney who is vigilant for those he represents, and you can contact him today. It's Stan McDonald, law firm of Wilmer and Lee, 256-479-3020. That's 256-479-3020. And no representation made, the quality legal service be performed as great, the quality legal service before the other lawyers. Ta-da!
Gets better every day. But in a couple of months, you're going to not be able to tell what you're saying anymore.
What did he say? Just take his word for it.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Hey, by the way, I said earlier in the monologue, you know, I've been watching. So JP and I and the rest of the crew here have been working on some stuff. And we're going to be putting out some announcements, but I'm going to tell all you ruffians out there in ruffian land something that the rest of the world has not heard yet. So y'all know that we do podcasts. In fact, the latest edition of my Right Philosophy podcast is out today. And this one's called The Battle for Two Borders. But The Battle for Two Borders, Right Philosophy podcast out today. But we also have two new podcast lineups starting this week. Pretty stoked about this. The first one drops tomorrow. We'll put out two episodes on day one. Am I right? Two episodes on day one?
Yep.
Of, It's called The Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson, who is an amazing guy who does amazing work combating human trafficking and all that. Bless his time in the SEAL teams. But Jared Hudson has a very high quality, very strong presence and great production quality. His podcast will drop in starting tomorrow. You can find it at rightsidemedia.org or on our YouTube channel. It's called The Liberty Minute with Jared Hudson. And then the other one, I'm pretty stoked about this, drops on what, Sunday?
Sunday evening, yep.
Yeah, Sunday evening we'll drop another one called The Controversial Mom. So Emily Jones, who many of y'all know, started Moms for Liberty here in the state of Alabama. Emily Jones is doing one called The Controversial Mom, and it's a hoot. And she does hers kind of on the go. I mean, like she's in her car sometimes, in her house sometimes. But I'm pretty excited about this because she is literally, she's one of my heroes, really, to get down to it. She is somebody who just saw a thing that needed to be done and decided to get busy. And so Emily Jones, her new podcast, two episodes drop on Sunday. It's called The Controversial Mom. So we're going to have on Wednesdays, The Right Philosophy Podcast. On Thursdays, The Liberty Minute Podcast mm-hmm. with Jared Hudson. On Fridays, The Right Click Podcast with Birdman. And on Sundays, we've got The Controversial Mom with Emily Jones. Pretty excited about our lineup. Mm-hmm. All great conservative content. Encourage you to check it out. You can find all of it at our YouTube channel, on our website at rightsidemedia.org. Where else?
That's it as of now. We're working on getting an audio podcast of that out as well. But the Liberty Minute will be out tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., so mark that on your calendar. Go check it out.
Outstanding. Yeah, very good. I'm pretty stoked about this. I mean, we got a great crew of people doing this stuff.
Yeah, and I'll just say I think everybody will love the new – as somebody who's seen the episodes already, just take my word on it. They're good. So go check it out when they come out.
Outstanding. Well, good deal. Thank you, production manager. Appreciate you. Yeah, we've accelerated here. We got good news about other things that are coming in the near future. We'll tell you about that when the time is ripe. But for now, just know this. We got a lot going on. It's not just Right Side Radio. Now it's Right Side Media. Wow. What is happening around here? All right, I got a bunch of text messages coming in, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text us. I'll take it when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about this one. I do mean it. It's Alabama. Y'all, Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Text messages. Let me get a few of these while I can. Scott from Somerville says, great monologue. Said the more they realize they wouldn't even be alive right now without God's grace and mercy, this world wouldn't have near the problems it does. I know if it weren't for God, I'd be both physically and spiritually dead right now. Scott, I can so relate, man. Thank you for your comments. Brian from Huntsville says, Charlene, pinned your Ranger tab on. Excellent. Said, not only the soldier serves, the whole family does. Please tell her the Tennessee Valley appreciates her service while you are running Right Side Radio. I will do that, my friend. In fact, she probably just heard you say it. But thank you, man. Appreciate that. Yeah, I've still got a picture of her pinning my tab on. Well, right after she pinned it on. We're standing next to each other. And I lost 31 pounds at Ranger School. So I'm looking rather peaked, but I'm still smiling. I look like I want a sandwich. Give that man a sandwich. 31 pounds.
That's a lot.
I think I said on the air once before, though, I lost 31 pounds at Ranger School. I gained 32 back the first month after Ranger School. 32 pounds in 1 month.
That's impressive. That's almost more impressive than how much you lost.
Brother, I put on weight so fast that my cheeks hurt.
Yeah.
Like my face was inflating. It was just crazy. Scott from Russellville says, very inspiring monologue, Brother Phil. I always need to be reminded about that more often. Thank you, Scott. Thomas from Athens says, Colonel, thank you for your witness about your God-given mission. I judge that you have discerned his plan by reading and striving to understand his guidance and sacred scriptures, and for you to embark on telling the truth to us all. Thank you. And may he bless you and all of your loved ones, including us. Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate you very much. Paul from Decatur says, another great monologue. When you have God on your side, you're never alone. Whether jumping out of an airplane or the SFQ course, or Ranger School, or in combat environments or any other military or life environments or life events, remember, with God, you are never alone no matter how bad it gets. Paul, I'd say you get it. Thank you, man. Appreciate you. All right, we're gonna dive into Dipper number one now. And before I do that, I got to say, this is a total aside here. I'm about to talk about violence and crime in a city that I love. Having said that, there's a city that I love that I've just visited, New York. It's New York City where that CEO was shot, right? So I don't know if you know, see this or not, but the CEO of United Healthcare Insurance Company appears to have been the victim of a complete hit job. Now, they're talking about him being a professional, and I'd say, yes, it appears that he is, because the video is out. If you have not seen it, it's chilling. It's like something out of a movie. The CEO is walking down the sidewalk in the evening. He's got a suit on, and all of a sudden, a guy in a hoodie wearing a backpack steps out with an obviously silenced pistol. I can't tell the caliber from where I'm looking at it, but I'm going to say it's a 22. But he steps out with a silenced pistol, shoots him in the back, clears a stoppage, shoots him again, clears another stoppage, walks up close to him, shoots him again, shoots him four times that I can tell. It's an obvious hit job. And clearing the stoppage, I see somebody commenting online. He was probably having to clear the stoppage because it was subsonic ammo and it doesn't cycle the slide as well. Very well may be. At least three, maybe four rounds in the victim. A hit job. But the guy was on video. I would say the true hitman would have known there was a camera right there. But then again, maybe he wanted it seen. I don't know. All I'm saying is this is chilling, and there's a manhunt going on right now in New York City. It's amazing.
The timing seemed convenient, too, because apparently he was on his way to a meeting to talk to investors. So I have no idea who would want this to happen or why, but like the evidence shows that something's up with this. So.
Yeah, this is not – there was no theft. There was nothing that we can see. Literally a guy with a hoodie and a mask on, by the way, walks up behind him. And the first shot, the guy's walking away. The first shot is from about 15 feet. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the shots and then I guess the coup de grace shot was when he was on the ground. This is pretty ugly.
Yeah.
I don't know if something in his personal life, professional life, what, but it was an obvious hit. He was the target. He was the only, there was another bystander who saw it happening and ran away. You can see that in the video. It's like the shooter had paid no attention to the fact that the other person was standing there.
Yeah. His demeanor seemed a bit too calm for this to be his first time.
Oh, he never stopped walking. He just walked calmly past him and then stepped out into traffic and crossed the road.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Scary stuff.
It's like something out of a movie. But let me talk about this for a minute. Crime in our city streets. So I'm going to talk about for a minute. I'm going to get to Birmingham, but let me just say, you'd like to think this stuff is out there. I just described a thing in New York City, right? Then there's this story. How about property crime? Like hotair.com. Dateline yesterday. San Francisco. Well, we know San Francisco. They're a mess, man. They got liberal DAs out there. They're not even trying. Well, it's true. San Francisco, it says on hotair.com, recently arrested a crew of shoplifters. The oldest in the group was only 18. The youngest was 12. This group of shoplifters had apparently carried out more than a dozen robberies. But then the San Francisco Standard followed up by publishing another story about a 23-year-old thief who has been arrested 10 times in the last 4 years. 10 times. It gives her name. It's not necessary. It's just, you know. But goes on to say that they finally caught her, and the judge released her on her own recognizance, despite the fact that she had four ongoing theft cases. Of course she didn't show up. They didn't put her on electronic monitoring. She wasn't required to report to authorities. Why? Nobody knows. Liberal judge. She failed to appear on all four pending cases. They wound up sentencing her to 2 years in prison. They finally caught her, put her in prison. She stayed there for all of 6 months. She was released from prison. 3 months later, she stole a bunch of Louis Vuitton handbags. And then she entered another place and stole 47 pairs of expensive sunglasses. She's basically a property thief, and she's doing it to feed an addiction, I'm sure. But the reality is this kept going and kept going and kept going. Finally, where's the last bit? Let me get to it. Finally, it says, in case you've lost track, that's two more burglaries while she was out on bail for the prior cases. Plus, she failed to show up to court. She was finally arrested and is now being held without bail. It only took a year to get to that point. But it's San Francisco, Phil. Yeah, it's just San Francisco. Don't worry. It's just San Francisco. Oh, wait a minute. Let's talk about Birmingham. I always caveat this so that people will know I'm not bashing Birmingham. But and Charlene even says, every time you mention Birmingham, you got to say you grew up there. Yes, I did. I did a lot of my growing up there. I did. Running barefoot around, you know, Wylam and Inslee and old parts of West Birmingham. Granddaddy was a steel worker. My family had, I mean, all everybody in my family came from that side of Birmingham, on my dad's side. And I love that city. I did a lot of my growing up there. Being in downtown, I got my law degree in Birmingham. I mean, all of it. I love that city. I have spent more time there than, with the exception of Huntsville and Gadsden, than almost anywhere. Lived in Mobile for a while, all of it. But I love the Magic City. It's a great city with a lot of history. Study on CBS 42 in December of last year. CBS 42 cites a study in December of 23, exactly 1 year ago, saying that using FBI crime data to look at crime rates in 302 large cities and 1,010 small cities and towns, that after crunching the numbers, a national organization had determined that the large city with the highest cost of crime was Birmingham, Alabama. The highest cost of crime, what does that mean? Well, when they break it down, what they look at is, what does it cost the citizens using the factors that they look at? We ranked worse than New Orleans, worse than St. Louis, worse than Detroit. We ranked worse than Memphis. I could go down the list, but they got the top 50. We worked worse than Atlanta. All said and done, Birmingham, Alabama, the crime cost per capita is roughly $11,392. We are considered to be the large city with the highest cost of crime in the nation, according to that study. Not a metric you want to be a part of. That being said, that was a year ago. A year ago. Let me say it again. A year ago. Knowing that a year ago, which, by the way, didn't just happen on that day, it was something that had been building up to that point, you have to look at it and go, well, hello, city council and mayor's office. What exactly have you done with this information, which is obviously public because we're reading it on the news? The answer to that is not much. The answer to that is they have not improved things like one bit. When we get back from this break, I'm going to tell you where we are now, because I said it earlier in the show, and I mean it. Unfortunately, the Magic City in some ways has become the Tragic City. There is no excuse for what we're looking at. There is a way to fix this. And oh, by the way, it does not involve throwing more money at it. It does not involve stupid commissions. It does not involve, you know, community action. It does not involve gun control. It just involves actually being tough on crime. How about that? We'll talk about it. Birmingham, Magic City equals Tragic City. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper, Magic City equals the Tragic City. And I'll be honest with you, it's I don't say that like I'm mocking them, because it's just... it's awful. It's like watching something you love just, you know, kind of deteriorate. I told you right before the break, CBS 42 ran a story in December of 23 showing that a national organization had reviewed all the FBI crime data of the largest cities in the U.S. and that among them all, the city with the highest cost of crime, Birmingham, Alabama. Fast forward a year. You'd like to think, okay, that stuff's out there. Everybody knows it. They're going to see that and take action. They're either going to refute the evidence and say you calculated it wrong, or they're going to say, here's what we're going to do to fix it. Well, numbers don't lie. It just is what it is. So fast forward a year. Story on AL.com. Phil, did you go to liberalAL.com? I did. So AL.com ran a story about 3 weeks ago. Birmingham's rise in homicides now stands out among Alabama's biggest cities. As homicides fall in other big cities in Alabama, Birmingham is grappling with a dramatic increase in deadly shootings. With well over a month left in the year, Birmingham has already surpassed 2023's homicide total. So they got the information, true crime data, late last year. They had set new records on homicides. Property crime was not going well. Birmingham ranked as number one in the nation for highest cost of crime. This year, we're breaking records. Oh, good. The Magic City, it says, is on the track to break the all-time homicide record of 148 that was set nearly a century ago. I'd like to know what was happening in 1933 to make it the high homicide. I mean, what in the world? I mean, just good gosh. But then it points out something I think is very prescient. This is very solid right here. It says Huntsville and Mobile both have growing populations and fewer murders. Think about that. Birmingham, which is losing people, stands out among the state's four biggest cities for its growing homicide rate. Birmingham officials say they continue to work toward solutions to curb the violence. Experts say change is possible. And then, of course, because it's AL.com, they start getting into, well, it's really about, you know, gun control and things like that. It's not. It's not at all. It's not at all. But let me give you some stats here. Get this. As of November 20th of this year, all right, so just last week, as of November 20th of this year, Huntsville had 16 homicides for the year. 16. Mobile had 32. Montgomery had 55. Birmingham had 131. That's called non-justifiable homicides. There were 10 more that were deemed to be justifiable, like self-defense. So they were homicides, but yet they were justifiable, so they won't be criminally charged. But that means there's been 141, technically, as of November 20th. That's unstinking believable.
That tells you one thing. That's a leadership problem, obviously. Because Huntsville, like you said, it's bursting through its own seams with how many people are pouring in. But yet they have, you know, a solid mayor and somebody who's hard on crime. And you look at Birmingham and Mayor Woodfin, who he's got to be one of the most liberal mayors in the country.
I'd say.
Like 100%. And the fact that he's in Alabama, it's embarrassing. But yeah, so all the stuff about population or like I found it funny, the obsession with the Glock switches whenever the last mass shooting happened. He's like, I told you it's the Glock switches.
The Glock switches do it all.
It's not a culture problem.
Everybody's got a Glock switch. No, they don't.
Yeah. So it's that stat tells you all you need to know about where the problem lies. It's within the leadership.
The story goes on to then also blame it not just on gun control issues, but on poverty. So, and there could be a tie, but you know what though? You know what poverty's tied to? Again, leadership. If you're a city, by the way, Mayor Woodfin, if you're listening or somebody out there knows him who's listening, which is maybe not so likely because this is a conservative show, but if you're out there listening, if you think about it, on your watch, Birmingham went from being the biggest city in the state to the third largest city in the state. You went from, you know, having people coming in to people going out. You're losing population on a daily basis. Economic development is stymied right now in Birmingham. And oh, by the way, crime rate is going up. All while you're in office. Huntsville, it points out in this article, is very different than other major cities. According to federal data, the median income in Huntsville is $43,000. The poverty rate was 14%. In contrast, Mobile, the median income is $31,000. The poverty rate is 20%. But experts say when resources flow out of communities, local residents can be vulnerable and violence often occurs. Okay. It also means when you have stymied economic development because of bad policies and deteriorating infrastructure, that businesses don't want to set up there. And so you if you're going to have a revitalization program, you have to realize law enforcement comes with it. In Montgomery, and I've applauded this before, in Montgomery, which, by the way, is led by a liberal Democrat, Stephen Reed. But in Montgomery, they were dealing with a very high homicide rate. In 2023, they had 75. They've got 52 so far this year. But in June of this year, the Montgomery PD, in conjunction with the mayor's office, partnered together with the state law enforcement agency, ALEA, and they formed what's called a Metro Area Crime Suppression Unit. They've been getting guns and drugs off the streets, arresting criminals, and crime is down. Wow. Go figure.
Who would have thought?
I'm shocked at this.
Wait. Just sitting around a table talking about the problem doesn't fix it?
Holding press conferences about gun control doesn't fix it? Blaming the legislature doesn't fix it?
I'm shocked.
But it says then there's Birmingham. And while the Birmingham metro area is home to about 1.1 million people, the city itself has a population of 196,000 and dropping. For the last decade, it has had a growing homicide problem. Oh, by the way, Woodfin's been mayor for much of that. In October, Mayor Woodfin announced the creation of a crime commission. Oh, good. Why would he do that? Because we had a mass shooting. We did. In Five Points. Injured 17 people, killed 4. I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. Because now we also have to combine liberal Mayor Woodfin with judges and others in the area who are soft on crime and allow certain things to happen. So, yes, Birmingham's got a problem. Magic City? Tragic City? In some ways, yes. Now, I will say this. Trustful Tribune. Am I going to get to it? How much time have I got?
You got about 10 seconds before the music starts.
Then how about if I don't? I will save the Trustful Tribune for right after this break. But I've got a story here about Woodfin pursuing gun control, about Woodfin having citizens patrolling their own streets. Really? And then I've got, oh, by the way, the judge who has gone so soft on crime and is known to be, in his own words, liberal trash. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two here on the Hump Day. I'm going to the phones first right out the gate. Jeffro from Indiana is already on the line. Jeffro, what are you doing, man?
I'm in Indiana. Oh. I had a doctor's appointment today.
you got no road duty today?
Oh, man, no road food. I just got done eating the Golden Corral. I'm about stuffed.
Golden Corral, boy, I haven't eaten there in a long time. They still got that buffet?
Oh, yes, they do, yeah. It's senior thing, $11.99, you can't beat it. All you can eat. Beat the heck out of a Happy Meal.
I heard once a guy came down from up north to run a buffet at what do you call it, Ryan's, I think it was, and Ryan's buffet, and he said, you can't make money on a buffet in the South.
Well, that's probably because Ryan's all disappeared, man. They used to be the best.
Oh, they did. That was the big fat yeast roll, wasn't that, Ryan's?
Oh, yeah, that and just the real nice tender steaks and everything. It was just so good.
Dadgummit. All right, now that we've talked about food, what's on your mind, man? What do you think about this Birmingham stuff?
Well, the Birmingham stuff, what I'm about to say may sound completely insane to you and I, but it makes sense to the Democrats.
Oh, okay.
These people in these blue cities, they don't care about crime. They don't care about, a lot of things and stuff that... We're sitting there, complaining about it because, it looks insane to us. They have how many people are getting killed and things. But if they cared about it, the majority of voters in those cities, they would quit electing the same people that they do.
I know.
And with all these murders and everything, let a white cop kill a black a criminal and justified shooting or whatever. They will march in the streets and complain and go nuts and everything and tear down things. But, you can have somebody, black kill black, maybe 15, 20 people or whatever. You ain't never seen anybody marching about that.
No. So, in fact, that's what we had. Was it last month or September, I think it was, the nightclub shooting in Birmingham at Five Points. 17 people killed, wounded, 4 killed. And it was a black shooter and black victims.
Yeah. Where was the demand and the marchers and everybody coming out against that, and demanding, that they do something about it?
Your point about leadership and them continuing to elect the same people over and over again, you're right. It makes no sense. It's the definition of insanity. Now, I have seen, though, in other places around the nation, they're starting to get fed up with it. You can look out there in California where they just did a recall on, Gascon, the liberal DA of Los Angeles. So there are people that are getting fed up, and it's we just need some people to get fed up in Birmingham.
Yeah. Basically, they're going to Darwin themselves, I guess, because, in Darwinism, only the strong survive, and I don't know if they're intelligent enough to survive the carnage that they create by electing these feckless leaders that don't do anything. And it's like I say, it's insane to you and I as conservatives, but for the Democrats, hey, it's, you know,
it's a way
as
of
long
life.
As you don't take away my abortion rights, I'm not going to say anything about it. But, you know, go kill somebody, you know, no problem.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said a minute ago, there's a reason why Birmingham went from being the biggest city in the state to the third biggest city in the state in just a span of a few years. People are flooding yeah. out of the borders of Birmingham left and right.
Yeah, it's because the Spain people left, and this leaves the born nutty crew there that either don't have enough money to move or just, you know, don't bother them to be there.
Well, we'll see where it goes. But, well, listen, man, enjoy your day, and I hope you're back on the road again soon.
I'll be back tomorrow.
All right, brother. We'll see you.
Have a good one, Phil.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so Mayor Randall Woodfin, he did speak out. Oh, good. Last Thursday, I believe it was, story in the Trustful Tribune. Mayor Randall Woodfin, flanked by 145 firearms that were taken off the street by Birmingham police, spoke out against gun violence in a 30-minute long video. Well, good. How about this? How about knife violence? How about lead pipe violence? How about blunt force trauma violence? It's always the gun violence. Were every single one of the homicides in Birmingham related to firearms? I doubt it. But Woodfin said that the city is seeing the worst of the gun violence epidemic. He said, I care about decreasing gun violence in our city. I care about decreasing crime. I care about saving lives, but it's going to take more than one man. We're coming up on an unfortunate milestone this year in 2024 of having homicide rates at a rate not seen since 1933. Well, at least he knows. But see what that is? That's an admission. That's an admission right there. He sees it. In the law, I would say on the civil side, I would say there is at the very least some measure of what we call contributory negligence. That means you contributed toward the issues yourself, sir. And that brings you to a place where you can no longer complain because you brought it on yourself. Then on, you know, I look down and it says Mayor Woodfin said he's calling on both state and county and country. State and country, I guess he means national, state and national legislatures as well as the community to make a change. How about this? Just go get tough on crime. Well, what's his solution? Do you remember earlier this year? So I got a piece from AL.com. Phil, you went to AL.com again? I did. AL.com. Birmingham, May of this year. Birmingham could have up to 200 more sets of eyes and ears watching crime on the streets. Okay. We got recruiting drive for the law enforcement. Is that what you think it is? Would that sound right? Would you want to see 200 more law enforcement officers?
That does, but I know that's not it, you know.
No, it's a Citizens Observer Patrol.
Yeah, I remember seeing this story.
Citizens Observer Patrol. What does that mean? Well, Councilman Hunter Williams, who is one of the only conservatives on the city council in Birmingham, and I'm not sure if he's a conservative, but he's definitely more conservative than most of them. He said, I got a lot of safety issues with this. I think if we're going to provide them vehicles, they're going to provide them vehicles. There's already a lot of vehicle needs within the police department that I can think of that'd be better served for actual officers rather than old ladies riding around reporting things. Under the program, Birmingham residents would volunteer and be trained to patrol the city's neighborhood and report activity to the police. They would wear some form of city identification, T-shirts, caps, vests, driving vehicles that are marked with green lights. They had a two-year program similar to this in the Woodlawn area. They say it was successful, except that they lost their grant. They couldn't fund it anymore, and one of the volunteers got beat up, and no one wanted to do it again. Okay. Sounds pretty successful. So, John Archibald, if you're familiar with John Archibald, very liberal writer, opinion writer, Pulitzer guy, from AL.com. Phil, AL.com again? Yes. AL.com. He said he looked at the story and first he thought he was reading The Onion.
That's what it's becoming.
That's what it sounds like. He said, one can only imagine how Birmingham's latest grand crime-fighting idea came about or how it seemed to be a good idea. And it's not even on The Onion. I checked. It's not the cast Saturday Night Live working on a skit. It's real, which means, oh my God, they're serious. That's what he says. He goes on to describe them as Walmart greeters or mall cops. That's basically what we're looking at.
So instead of empowering cops, you're going to get untrained people to report to cops.
And there you have it. Now, it's not just Mayor Woodfin. Am I bashing him? Yes, I am. But it's not just Mayor Woodfin. We got a situation here. There is a judge, and I say this knowing full well that I'm a practicing attorney, but I'm going to call out a judge. Judges are supposed to be apolitical. Judges are supposed to refrain from making political commentary. Judges can certainly have their own views, their own opinions. They're certainly entitled to that. They're not supposed to do campaigning, electioneering, or politicking of any kind. They're not supposed to be, they may run on a party ticket. That's what you have to do to get elected. But they don't need to go out and spend a lot of time commenting in the public arena about politics. And yet, there's a judge in Birmingham who refers to himself as liberal trash. He does. What's his name? Judge Carpenter, isn't it? Yes, it is. I'm trying to find his full name. Oh, shoot. I can't find it. Judge Carpenter down in Bessemer. Come on, Phil. Find the spot in there where it says his name so I can read it out. Jefferson County Judge David Carpenter. Jefferson County Judge David Carpenter, who frequently posts politically charged pro-Democrat messages on his Twitter feed, most recently expressed his support for President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, describing himself as liberal trash, is also the person who, by the way, should have kept the shooter who killed 4 and wounded 17 behind bars, and he didn't. The shooter has now been arrested, innocent till proven guilty, but the suspected shooter is Damian LaRon McDaniel, 22, of Forestdale, with a lengthy criminal history in Jefferson County, now behind bars in the killings of 4, injuring of 17 in September. Court documents show that McDaniel, the shooter, would have been in prison if not for the decision of Jefferson County Judge David Carpenter. Just 1 year before, McDaniel went on his alleged shooting spree. In April 2023, McDaniel was sentenced to 15 years split, with 2 years to serve and 3 years for probation. The charges stem from a 2019 shooting, but he was put back on the street. Then his bond was repeatedly revoked because he kept being seen with firearms. And then, oh, by the way, he killed 4 and injured 17, and this judge will take no measure of responsibility for it. In fact, he has posted about himself before multiple times that here's his quote on Twitter. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right here. "I'm liberal trash. I'm your worst nightmare. And I'm an elected official, a far left liberal, progressive, Democrat, socialist, white, native Alabamian traitor to his race. And I'm glad that," and he talks about a reporter who's liberal, "is here doing what she does." Why is a judge doing that? He's commented negatively about Tuberville. I'm looking at that one. He's commented negatively about Katie Britt. I'm looking at that one. He's commented negatively about, Trump and MAGA Republicans. I mean, if I was in his courtroom right now, I would feel certain I don't have any chance of having a fair shake.
I'm looking at his Twitter too. I'm even reading a tweet of him talking about eliminating the Electoral College.
Oh yeah,
that guy's a judge.
Yeah, he's a judge.
It's ridiculous.
He's a judge. He's a judge, and he is absolutely soft on crime. So now we've got, not only do we have soft on crime policies where they don't want to deal with the real issues in Birmingham. People are flooding out of the city. It's one of the highest crime rates in the entire nation, certainly in the state of Alabama. And the shooter most recently, who killed 4 and wounded 17, that's 21 people that got shot by this guy. All that Woodfin can do is cry about Glock switches. And the judge who should have kept him behind bars is also a liberal. I'm just telling you, when you put these people in, by the way, that judge got elected and Woodfin got elected. And to the point of Jeff from Indiana a moment ago, if you keep electing these people, this is what you're going to get. So here's the bottom line. I love Birmingham and I want it back. I want the Birmingham of my youth back. I want to know that my grandkids could run barefoot in some of the same streets that I did if they wanted to, and it'd be all right. But it's not right now. It's absolutely not. The Magic City is too often becoming the Tragic City, and we got to get a grip on it. All right, we're taking a break right now. I'll switch gears. I'll get some of your text messages when I get back, and then we'll jump into the next one about DEI. Oh, make it stop now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. I ran a little bit long on that last segment, so I'll get some text messages. I also got to tell you, too, I just saw a video. I was showing it to JP during the break. Joe Biden is in Africa right now, apparently giving out checks, you know, ribbon cuttings and giving out checks. What a great thing to do. And there's a video, and I watched it, and I even enlarged it to make sure I was seeing what I was seeing. And he appears, the president of the United States fell asleep in the middle of a roundtable summit with other world leaders from Africa. Was he asleep? He was. Don't you think he was?
1,000%.
Well, that's pretty certain.
No doubt about it.
How embarrassing is that? My gosh. I realize there's jet lag, and I also realize he's 81 years old, but my gosh, man. Give him a Red Bull. Keep him in the game or something. I mean, you said he was sharp and running rings around the staff, right? Nope. Hey, let me get some text messages real quick. Let's see who I got here. Jamie, going back to my monologue, Jamie from Pulaski says, my brother-in-law is a West Point grad of 71 and was at Ranger School just prior to the wedding on April 1st. He said, he was like you, lost 40-plus pounds. Wow. Said his dress blues just hung on him. My sister had not even heard from me until he graduated the week of, and I remember her wondering if he was going to show up. Then he says, beat Navy. Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate you, and thank you for your brother-in-law service, too. John from Huntsville said, JP, did you hear those rumors Nick Saban's coming out of retirement to be the new coach at West Virginia?
That's a good one. Not going to happen.
Not going to happen?
You don't think shot. No. Well, when he's not doing game day on the weekends, he's got his feet propped up on Lake Tuscaloosa, living the life right now. He's not giving that up to get back into.
And he's probably got the office right now at the stadium.
Yeah,
and
he's got a office that like overlooks the field, and he's not getting back in the shark pit of college football. No shot. Especially to coach West Virginia, that's a project right there. That's a project.
Maybe he sees it as a project.
No shot.
Maybe he's like, I feel like I'm a flipper now. I want to flip this house. I'm going to go in there and fix it up, flip it, and go to the next one.
That'd be quite the flipper to do, let me tell you that.
He's going to take on Liberty next.
Oh, jeez.
This would be great. Then he's going to Oregon State because he's tired of watching Oregon win and get overrated. Then he's going to Oklahoma. It's going to be awesome.
He's going to go program to program.
Program to program. Give me 2 years. And then kick me to the curb.
Have a reality TV show that follows him around as he does it.
He'll just, you know what? There's a show in that. I'm not getting any text messages because you're distracting me. So the Nick Saban, it's just like you've got those we used to call them home shows.
Yeah,
like you watch like the Magnolia Network now, where they have what's it with the couple that does all the home flips.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I can't remember the name of that show.
We can go on ESPN. We'll call it Saban Flips.
Saban Flips.
I like it.
The season doesn't end until they have a positive record.
It's like the guy who comes in and fixes up your bar and makes it and tells you all the stupid stuff you've been doing. You've been drinking yourself into bankruptcy.
That's a great show. I don't know that guy's name, but it's a great show.
If it's Nick Saban, though, he comes in, he looks at your program and goes, you will cancel the portal. No one is going to be allowed to get NIL, and we're going to play some ball.
What are we doing? That's great content.
Let me talk to you about rat poison. Okay. Brian from Decatur. Get back on track. Come on. Brian from Decatur says, I disagree that Birmingham is a leadership problem. It's a residential problem. They keep voting for this year after year. Listen, you know what? I agree with you. At the same time, once the person's in office, they're also the one making the decisions. So the voters vote one time, and the guy in the office votes every single day. All I'm saying is, yes, voters, wake up. But once the guy's in office, how about this? Change your course. You're supposed to be in charge. I got more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, this one right here, Alabama. Y'all, Alabama. And I mean to say, this show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in for just good measure. There it is. I got to finish up some more text messages. Some of y'all are awesome getting your text. So brand spanking new, Amy from Decatur. I was wondering why she was texting that. Now I understand. So Amy from Decatur, thank you for joining the text lines. We're glad to have you. She points out that the year that that there was the highest murder rate in Birmingham history was 1933. She says it was also the year that Prohibition ended. Is that right?
Let me double check on that.
That's the Elliot Ness, the Untouchables, and all that kind of stuff. Is that when Prohibition ended? Wow, that would be. Everybody got liquored up, started shooting. I guess I don't know.
December 5th, 1933. So it was late into 1933, but okay. Still, yeah.
Okay, so that was the year though when there were still a lot of bootleggers.
Yeah,
and they were speakeasies and
ended. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I got you. Wow, Amy. Very okay. Listen, text in more often. That was pretty cool. That was thought provoking. Mike from Florence. Okay. Long text here. Let's see what he's got. Said, I'd be interested in knowing how much of the crime is happening in areas of federally subsidized housing. I've noticed that once apartment complexes change over to income-based rentals, they tend to get run down like ownership doesn't care as long as they're getting paid. And eventually they feel... Well, so the point you're making, though, is the poverty argument that they were making in the AL.com article they had, linking high crime with low income. And I'm not going to say that it doesn't happen that way, but I don't think you can blame the crime on low income. I think low income and crime are often cohabiting, but the truth of the matter is policing will also make a big difference. Just saying.
When you have a mayor like Woodfin who has openly been against opening more prisons and powering cops, that's the root of the issue. Like anything else is just dancing around the main issue.
Yeah.
Like it's that they're just looking, we're going to create a commission. We're going to make citizen cops or whatever. They're just dancing around the main issue of if more prisons are needed, then that needs to be done. And then if you empower your cops, that will fix the issue. Not having people sit around a table. You know, yeah. Our city sucks, right? Yeah. All right, cool. Meeting's over. You know, like that's pretty much it.
Don't beat around the bush. Tell me how you feel.
It really annoys me because I feel like Birmingham just becomes more of a dump every time I drive. Birmingham proper. Like, obviously, like I have family who live in Homewood, Vestavia, Hills, like, and those areas are great, but just Birmingham proper, I feel like every time I go through it, it just gets worse every time I go through, and it's annoying.
Well, there's also so much potential there. There's yeah, so exactly. much that That's... can be done there. There's so much history there, and there's so much more that could happen there in the event that they actually got their freaking act together. So, yeah. James from St. Clair County wants to make sure we know the show we're trying to dig out was called Bar Rescue. It is. It's called Bar Rescue.
That's, yep.
I don't even watch that show. It's one of those, like, I'm surfing the channels, and I see it for 5 minutes, and then I turn it to the next
thing. I see a lot of clips of it on my social media, and they're always great. That and the Gordon Ramsay, him going around and the flipping restaurants.
I've seen that one. So what will we call it then? If it's not Bar Rescue, if it's Saban doing a football program, what would you call it? Like Saban's Football Rescue?
The Program Flipper? Program Flipper Upper? Whatever.
The Ball Flipper.
The Ball Flipper, yeah.
Gary from Decatur says, too bad he didn't have a check for the hurricane victims in this country. What's he talking about?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I was wondering that when I read it.
Are you on our show, Gary, or somebody else's? Oh, I know what he's talking about. When I was talking about Joe Biden fell asleep.
Oh, yeah.
He went over there and announced $1 billion
yeah.
in aid to government when we have people right now that are still trying to recover from the hurricanes that swept through the Carolinas.
Why are we paying for Angola's, at least $1 billion worth for Angola's infrastructure? I don't get it.
Well, it's because it's important.
Well, there you go. That solves it right there.
I'm not sure what else I can say. Thomas Mathens checked in again. He says, Judge Carpenter, the liberal judge down in Birmingham that I talked about, he says, Judge Carpenter, any chance he's one of the many Soros organization's minions? How can we find out this liberal trash support base and then out those supporters? Well, you know, that's a great question, Thomas. And Thomas, let me give you some homework then, if you don't mind. You can go to the Secretary of State's website. You can go to the elections section. You can go to campaign finance reports and type in his name and get his campaign finance reports and see where he got his campaign funds. So that... That would tell you right there whether it would. Joe from Athens says Saban is the processor. What does that mean?
He's talking about the name for the show, probably.
Saban is the processor.
Because, you know, he always harped on the process. Just call it the processor. That's not bad.
So that's what we do. We have a show. We call it The Process.
And then David from Bucky says, call it Saban's Three and Out.
Nice. You got three chances with me.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You got three seasons, right? Yeah. And if we don't come back, then it's not my fault. It's your fault, and I'm out.
And if anybody leaves in the portal or harps on their NIL money, then you're out of here. You're not playing. I'm not playing you. If you put your name in the portal, you will not play anymore under me.
That's great, yeah.
All right, hey, let's talk about DEI for a minute. And I may still call. I got a clip from Christopher Rufo. You know what? Grab that clip. You got that? I'm gonna call for clip one. Audio on Christopher. So I'm changing subject. Yes, I am. I'm changing the subject. DEI. Holy crap. So DEI has got to go away. I mean, like right now. And I'm looking at stories that just like send me into fits here. I've got one. Where is it? Okay, let me find this. Okay, here. This one. State Department DEI head called Trump supporters racist and praised anti-cop rants in her deleted post. Story on the Daily Wire, Dateline yesterday. These are people, by the way, who are supposed to be in charge of DEI. This is the problem. DEI breeds activism. That's me saying it. DEI breeds activism. It attracts people who already have a chip on their shoulder, who believe there's a systemic problem. They got to break something to fix it, and they're going to poke blame at everybody that they think has privilege. And oh, by the way, that usually means they're racist themselves. So they come in with their predispositions to tell everybody else how to get on board with their predispositions, and they couch it in these interesting terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Y'all, we're about to see the DEI just be blasted when Trump takes office again. Christopher Rufo, who has become famous for his attacks on wokeism, especially his efforts at school choice, is now on the anti-DEI bandwagon. He did a podcast recently where he discussed some of the labelings of things that DEI activists like to use. And he says it in very clear and cogent terminology. And I thought it was worthy of a play. So you got that queued up? Let's go ahead and play it.
It's really important to understand exactly what people mean when they say diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. It sounds great. These are very soft, friendly, kind of simple words that seem to be unanimously supported. You know, everyone wants the diversity of opinions, experiences, relationships. Equity sounds much like the American principle of equality, treating people equally as individuals. And inclusion is something that everyone strives for. No one wants to feel excluded. But you have to actually dig down and see that these words are manipulative on the surface and have a deeper, more subversive meaning beneath them. So diversity doesn't mean a diversity of people and experiences and ideas. What it means in practice is that a bureaucracy separates people into racial categories, rewards people and punishes some people and punishes other people on the basis of their group identity. So this is a kind of racial spoil system that you see, for example, in affirmative action in college admissions, where Asian American students are harshly punished because of their ancestry, and Latino and African American students are generously rewarded because of their ancestry. This isn't a merit-based system. It's a race-based.
Stop it there a second. Point at the very end of that last phrase is huge. This is not a merit-based system. That's one of the keys to this, is merit does not apply in DEI. Race, gender, those are the overarching factors. You qualify for the job based upon how you look or what your birth certificate says or how you identify. That's what DEI is for. It is not about merit. You will not find the best employees when you hire with DEI. Keep playing.
Based redistribution system. Equity follows the same line of principle. It sounds like equality, but what equity means is trying to equalize those group outcomes. So using affirmative action, diversity policies, and redistribution or reparations, in order to come up with not equal outcomes, meaning you're treated equally as an individual, but equitable outcomes, meaning you're treated as an avatar of group identity, and the point of policy is to equalize those group outcomes until everyone has the same, whether it's college admissions, income, housing, etc. Everyone is supposed to have the same. It's the old kind of Marxist idea of treating people unequally in order to equalize their outcomes.
Okay, stop it there. Marxism. It's exactly what it is. It's the effort to make sure that what somebody has is taken and given to someone else so that everyone can partake of what one person created. It's a Marxist philosophy. It has got to go. I'm looking at a piece. I'm dating this. This is back to July of 2022. When DEI was really starting to become more and more visible, and not like a little bit, like in this particular story, there were parents that were having to push back on American colleges because these colleges, these bastions of thought and, you know, too often liberalism, were doing things like requiring their employees to sign DEI statements and basically say that they do not intend to do things on a merit-based system. In the city of Seattle, it says, for roughly 40% of the University of Washington's faculty recently rejected or abstained from voting on a measure that would have required them to seek advancement demonstrating their support of DEI. In other words, 40% said, "What are you doing? Why are you making me do this? Why are you saying I have to support DEI? I'm here doing my job." But DEI doesn't care about that. DEI does not care about whether or not you're doing your job well. DEI cares about, how did he word it? You are an avatar, meaning a visual representation of a allegedly disadvantaged group. That's all you are. You're an object. You're a representation. You're a trophy. You're to them a virtue signal. When you are in DEI land, nothing else matters. I'm about to run out of time. I just realized I got a caller on the line. Let me grab that real quick with about a minute left. Scott from Somerville. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. You were talking about crime earlier, and I'm a retired deputy sheriff. And one of the things I was going to tell you, I can't even count the number of people that I have hauled to jail. And part of the problem with the system right now, I haul them to jail, and the whole time on the way to jail, you tell them, "Hey, you've got a Class C felony, you know, that carries up to 10 years," and they could tell you what the short time on it was to EOS the sentence or in the early release date without even having been to court yet.
I believe it. By the way, thanks for your service, and I believe it. I used to work in a drug and alcohol treatment center, and we had kids who were in and out all the time, and they were, we called them treatment wise. They knew what words to say. They knew how to game the system and how
Absolutely. Yeah. And another thing is if you're charged with a drug crime, they do not want to send you to prison, and they will find diversion programs and probation and community corrections and everything in the world to keep from sending these people to prison.
Wow.
The problem is we have an 80% recidivism rate in the Alabama prison system.
Oh, I'm keenly aware.
All these people that should have been in prison aren't, and they end up going anyway after they've been let out a dozen times.
Hey, Scott, I got to run up to a break, but I appreciate your service to the community, man. Thanks for calling in.
All right, take care.
Thank you. I do have to go to a break. I just realized what. Okay, take it to a break there, brother. We'll take the break right now. I'm on DEI. When I come back, I'll tell you about a few things that are happening. Like, holy cow, what did that lady say who actually worked for the school systems in the Department of Defense? Yeah, we'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. The lovely Charlene is in studio right now decorating us for Christmas. So we'll have those of y'all that watch on the live stream will be seeing a Christmas tree in the background for too much longer. Getting in the mood. Speaking of which, those of y'all watching the live stream, that just brings up a point. A bunch of y'all do watch on the live stream. And do not forget, you always have the availability of hearing or watching the show live online, even if you're outside the radio signal of one of our stations. So just go to rightsidemedia.org or go to Rumble or go to YouTube or go to either one of our two X accounts, which would be rightside_media or my personal one at @SinPhilWilliams. And we're tracking on all of those. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah. And we, like you said, we'd greatly appreciate your follow on rightside_media on the Twitter page. And then also we are 8 subscribers away on YouTube from 700. So
eight.
The next mark on our way to 1,000. So Twitter and YouTube, as well as everywhere else that we're on, we'd appreciate your follow.
Absolutely, man. I mean, this is how we grow. All right. So each one of these platforms has thresholds you have to meet to be able to do the next things. And so our goal is 1,000 on YouTube by the end of the year. I'd love to see it by the end of the year, but certainly 700 this week. So if you wouldn't mind hitting a follow or subscribe on any of those, I would certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much. David from Bucky's checked in. He goes, call Saban, show the Saban 3 and Out. Ah. I think the one that may be the winner, though, is Jeff from Athens. Call it Ball Rescue.
Ball Rescue is a good one. That's a great one.
He's not going to do it, but wow, that's still pretty funny. TB from Toonerville says, Nick, my team. What does that mean?
I guess that's his name. Like, fix my team.
I get it. Brian from Huntsville says DEI should mean don't elect idiots. I totally agree. And also, by the way, don't hire idiots like this one. Going back to this DEI discussion, Daily Wire has a piece that came out today. The Fed said that the anti-white activist DEI unit was disbanded, but no, she was actually promoted. What? Okay. There's this self-proclaimed revolutionary, she calls herself that, self-proclaimed revolutionary who was removed from a role where she was pushing left-wing ideology in schools for the children of the military. So some of y'all know, and I actually attended at one point, DOD has schools for American kids overseas. So and even here in the States. So DOD school system is pretty huge. They call it the Defense Education Activities. So anyway, this lady, Kalisa Wing, is the former Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Chief for the Department of Defense Education Activity Schools. Right? She got a lot of pressure when Congress got wind of the fact that she was out there on social media trashing what she called white folks, spelled F-O-L-X, white folks, and saying how the police ought to be defunded. And she would even go on to say things like, someone had the caudacity, that's capital A, capital U, as in Caucasian, caudacity. Said someone had the caudacity to say black people can be racist too. I got news, lady. You are the poster child. In 2020, she said, I'm exhausted by 99% of the white men in education and 95% of the white women. Where can I get a break from white nonsense? This is the woman in charge. Guess what? She got promoted to a Department of Education job where she was making $153,000 a year and continuing to push her same dogma. DEI, y'all, has got to go. Like, make it stop now. I didn't even get to all my material on that because we're going to the Grand Council. Coming up next, Jeff Poor, Dale Jackson, little old me. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 3 on Hump Day. And you know the deal. Hump Day, the middle of the week. We also have this thing we do at 4 o'clock called the Grand Council, where I bring in two of my brethren and talk radio, and we just ping each other with questions and see where the chips fall. So let me call the roll on the council. From FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile, host of the Jeff Poor Show. Oh, by the way, he's the editor-in-chief for 1819 News and also does work for, I don't know, Breitbart and a whole bunch of other people. Jeff Poor, are you there?
I'm present.
You are indeed. Thank you, man. All right. Turning to the north, up yonder in Huntsville, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, Cumulus Broadcasting's WVNN, host of the Dale Jackson Show. Oh, by the way, he's also the program director and does some stuff for Yellowhammer News. Dale Jackson, are you there?
What?
I pronounce a quorum. Hit it, JP.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Ba-da. Ba-da. All right, fresh off of last week where it was nothing but one technical gaffe after another, I've got the crew in place. Jeff Poor, you first.
How important is it for Trump, for Pete Hegseth, to get through this rough patch?
So that was one of my questions, was do I think he's going to – I was going to ask, do y'all like him or not? But Pete Hegseth, so, I mean, is Ron DeSantis really waiting in the wings, or is that a rumor? I don't know. But I think the reality is it's important. I think this is a high-profile nomination. This was never intended to be a throwaway nomination, in my opinion. And I think that there will also be some real misgivings among the Republican base if one of the senior-most positions within the administration can't get confirmed. It'll also show that they're still allowed to trash people's reputation and get away with it. So I think, even though I think DeSantis would be amazing, I'm fine with DeSantis if it came down to it. I'm okay with Pete Hegseth. I know that Pete, by the way, I have a feeling that Pete will be the guy who really takes care of the lower-ranking soldiers who need somebody to look after them. Dale.
If these allegations are real, then, I mean, he's obviously in a lot of trouble. But the smear job is sort of the point, right? Like you said, I think he's in trouble, obviously. The short answer is there. But you just have to ask, you know, how much of this do we allow to go on? But you just stand by him just because, you know, there's so much to this. And it's incredibly unfortunate because it looks as if all of the, yeah, maybe he's a carouser and a drinker. And good Lord, I've been doing morning radio for 30 years. There's been plenty of times when I've probably been legally drunk. Okay. But at
this
least
is not a confession booth. Let's go.
I'm being honest. Yeah. But I mean, I'm just telling you. I mean, good Lord. So I'm hungover, absolutely. Okay, and the idea that somehow makes him unfit to be there is ridiculous. If you've got like a rape allegation that you can prove, fine, take him down. But 10 unsourced people saying he drinks too much, give me a break. Yeah, that's pathetic.
And by the way, what poor journalism to say 10 anonymous sources. You got 10 that don't want their names out there on something like this? For the love of God.
Can we also just say this? And again, sir, I'm not trying to besmirch your character. But you've been in the military a long time. I'm assuming you knew a lot of pretty hardcore drinkers who were stand-up guys and got the job done, right?
I've known a few. Just a few.
Okay. Just checking.
And they didn't do radio. But yes, I did. All right. So, Jeff, your own question. What are you thinking?
They have to get him through. If they don't get him through, the Democrats will smell blood in the water. Tulsi Gabbard is next. And Democrats and the media will pick these guys one by one. They absolutely can't got a fight now. Gates was their mulligan, and now this is the hill to die on.
I don't disagree. And I think it's also very interesting, though, to see what Republicans are going to push back on this. And, you know, you're going to have the usual, you know, suspects like Collins and Murkowski. But I'm even seeing right now there seems to be a very soft sort of approach to this by people like Lindsey Graham. And they better get their act together. And I think we need to show a concerted effort on day one. All right, next question. Dale, what do you got?
All right, so sundown towns. Me and Jeff Poore and I have talked about this an awful lot. Coleman gets this reputation. They had the sundown sign in their town until 1994. And I'm like, really, is there a photo of this? No, but everybody knows it. And it's like, just give me something about this. Well, here we have AL.com, the preeminent news organization in the state. They are the paper of record with no newspapers. I got it. They're out here smearing Coleman, Alabama as a sundown town because some weirdo on TikTok said, I'm doing the voice here. We're not coming to Coleman. Oh, no. It may be a nice Christmas town, but we're not coming. And they put this up there as if that is quality content of any way, shape, or form, smearing an entire community. And then they just take it down and don't say a word about it because they got called out. My question is this. Should we metaphorically burn down AL.com? Metaphorically? and Jeff, I forgot to grab it when I saw it earlier, and now I can't find the video anywhere. Did anyone on your team grab it by any chance?
Grab what video?
Was it the
video?
The one that was on AL.com and the weird guy talking about Coleman.
Yeah.
I saw it. I don't know. I didn't know they took it down.
Yeah, so, I forgot to grab it.
So for the benefit of the audience, a sundown town is one that is still considered racially segregated, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what crap. So this is a classic. Go ahead, Jeff. What do you got?
There's got to be somebody from Coleman out there who can answer this damn question, because we've been calling around all day. We've been looking, like, what I want. Listen, I want to have this headline. No, Coleman, Alabama is not a sundown town. But the people in Coleman, and for God's sakes, if there's somebody in this list of guys, because this is smack dab right there in Coleman, Alabama, respond to us and help us, like, knock this rumor out once and for all. I've been hearing this sundown stuff my entire life about Coleman, Alabama. I grew up in Shelby County. It was like a thing. I spent time chasing it down. No one seems to even know anything about this. There's all kinds of rumors being peddled. But we got to put this to rest once and for all. If somebody out there has got to help me on this one.
Well, and the new pro tem of the Alabama State Senate is going to be the senator from Coleman. So you think they would want to bring this story out before he got confirmed. But all said and done, what crap. And once again, it's like one of those, like if you have a picture of it, that's where you go with the story. But the idea of saying it's out there and making it news when there's nothing out there and no one can show you where they got the so-called news, that's not reporting. That's just tripe. That's social media. I heard it somewhere. It must be true because it was on the internet stuff. That's all that is.
It's called lying. Lying.
Okay.
That's what it is.
I like my version, but yeah, you're right.
This goes way back before social media. Like I said, this goes back a long time. This mythology about the sundown.
No, I don't even know why I care so much about it. It just pisses me off because it's a lie. I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
And by the way, Coleman's also a beautiful town. I mean, what a beautiful community.
It's made up. But, like, whenever you go try to, like, and Dale, you remember you spoke in Coleman that time and brought it up, and everybody kind of, put their hands in their pocket. But, like, you remember that?
That's because they thought Dale went after their wallets. That's what was happening there. They were confused because the inebriated guy was speaking to them. That's what was happening. All right, last question. I got to go before we hit the break. No, you're fine. But listen, here's the bottom line. Speaking of Coleman, so Garland Gudger, state senator from Coleman County, is apparently going to be the next pro tem of the Alabama Senate, a pretty powerful position. He also, if I'm not mistaken, voted pro-gambling and anti-school choice last time, which shocked a lot of us. Your thoughts on this. Is he going to be a pro tem who sets an agenda and goes conservative, or is he going to be squishy and middle of the road, Dale?
I don't know. I mean, this is kind of concerning personally. I mean, look, the body voted for school choice and anti-gambling, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the reality.
Yep.
Can he move them in the other direction? Are they going to undo school choice? Probably not. Is there a big push for gambling coming? I think so. Jeff doesn't. And I don't think you do either. We've talked about this a lot. But can he... does he control what happens? Yeah, it's an important piece. I just wonder what the conversations were like with the pro school choice people, because it's got to expand. I mean, that's the whole thing. You got to keep growing this thing. I think that's what's expected. But this is an interesting choice, and it depends. Is it going to be his personal agenda or the agenda of the caucus?
And that's what I'm concerned about. Jeff, what do you think?
I don't think much is going to change from Gregory to Garland Gudger. I think the big thing will be the brand. I think Gudger's a much more like personable guy. Yeah. Reed is just kind of a cookie cutter politician, to be honest. But let me see this. A couple of things on the school choice. I don't understand that. I know he voted against it. On the gambling, I give him a little bit of a pass here. He is the most popular guy in the state house. Garland Gudger is the most popular guy. Everybody likes him. He's the guy you want to go drink with. He's the guy that's always out partying. He is the most popular guy if they have like the yearbook category. The thing with him is, it is they got him to carry that gambling bill for that reason, and there was some deals trying to get him to carry that. If you carry this bill, if you be our guy on gambling, we'll help you get some of your other things through. I think he had a veterans bill he wanted and some other things. So, that helps assuage some of the fears a little bit. The school choice, I don't understand at all.
No, I don't either. I mean, I heard that he backed off because his superintendent asked him to. Well, listen, if your superintendent asked you to, okay, but what were your constituents clamoring for? But then, so the reality is I'm looking to see whether we're going to have somebody who will set an agenda, someone who will actually lead the herd the cat, so to speak, and not just try to pacify the Democrats to keep the train on the tracks. I'm ready for the train to come off the tracks once in a while. Like, how about get out there? What?
I mean, you were Livingston or Gudger. The best, neither one is going to do that, but your best shot at it is probably Gudger.
I would agree with that. I would agree that of the two that we had there, I think that Gudger is the one most likely to actually walk in the authority of the position and be a leader in it, and I'm looking for that. All right, we got to go to a break. I ran long. We'll come back with a short segment on round two of the Grand Council. I got Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5 and 1819 News, and Dale Jackson at WVNN up yonder in Huntsville and Yellowhammer News. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Here on round two of the Grand Council with Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. First question out the gate. Dale, what do you got?
All right. So I you know, one of the big questions I have about all this pardon stuff is, what did Hunter do in 2014 that he needs a pardon? That's question one that I have. And then I'll also ask, I was told that preemptive pardons were a sign of guilt. Our good friend, Mo Brooks, they were told that he requested a preemptive pardon, and I've talked to him about that multiple times, and we were told, well, the only reason you'd do that is if you were guilty. Well, apparently, they're considering preemptive pardons for Liz Cheney, Anthony Fauci, Adam Kinzinger, and others. Why?
Pray tell, why? Why? We know why. I mean, we know exactly why. Preemptive. I mean, listen, first of all, Hunter actually pled guilty. So he had two things that he's pled guilty to that he's now been pardoned for. Also in 2014, that's the year he was kicked out of the Navy for drug use. That would be federal. And then also in 2014, that was the year he started getting money from Burisma in Ukraine. And who knows what else has happened since then with money from foreign nations. I the whole thing just is shady as the day is long. I had somebody tell me yesterday, you know, but he's a dad, and I get it. He's helping his son. I'm like, you know what? It doesn't work like that. And oh, by the way, if you were thinking you'd do it all along, then just tell the American people, you know, I'm really weighing that out. He's my son. Don't lie to us and say, it'll never happen. Not going to do it.
Or just say, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm his dad. Yeah, that's all you got to say. People will be like, wow, you're an a-hole, but we get it.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, now we know why Hunter turned out the way he did, because apparently spankings and accountability were not required as he grew up. And it still shows in his adult life. That's why he can sell finger painting and make millions of dollars.
They're feces paintings. That's what we've learned today.
Oh, wow. Somebody said that, and I thought, surely that's a joke. But Jeff, weigh in here. What are you thinking?
Just for a short time, I thought the question would be, y'all were both fathers. I mean, what would y'all have done?
I'd pardon him in a heartbeat.
You know what? I don't know that I would.
I'd hide the body, and then I'd pardon him.
I don't know that I would. I mean, the circumstances we got right now, it's not there was that one thing that my son did and it was a problem. It was a pattern of behavior that extended over 10 years worth of time. And I don't think in good conscience that anybody can look at that and go, it makes good sense to take care of that. That's and oh, by the way, it also indicates how much more he's covering up. So I really think, I don't know that I could. I don't know that I would. It's a hard call. I get it. But I'm also not president of the United States of America, hundreds of millions of people that look to me for leadership. So there's that. When you take a job like president, you sacrifice some of your personal ambitions, personal securities, and oh, by the way, personal efforts, period. There, I have spoken. Jeff, what you got?
Well, that was it. Like, I just pushed back a little. I mean, I don't think that's true. I mean, well, here's what I think is probably going to happen. He had to pardon him going back 10 years because you know, he's implicated personally. Joe Biden would be. So, you know, there was probably more where that came from. But I don't think because you're president of the United States, that changes your standing as a father. And I'd have to give my son another chance. I don't care how old he is. Yeah, I don't see being president changing that.
Yeah, but you're talking about this is like the nonviolent criminal version of a serial, you know, murderer. I mean, this is something that is not
right.
It's not one event. This is something that was 10 years worth of stuff that ranged from military to, you know,
all that's
laundering
true.
To
all that's true. But let me offer on Jeff's side, because I agree with him. Do you really want your son, who is the son of the president of the United States of America, potentially ending up in a prison when you don't have any power outside to do anything about it? Now, do we think he's in a prison? No.
No.
But of course we don't.
I think he would have gotten time served. He would have got an ankle bracelet. He would have played golf at some kind of secure facility.
Let me ask you this, guys. If he's not Hunter Biden, son of the president of the United States, do they even prosecute him?
Yes. I think they would have.
I think
the key indicator of that is the fact that it was actually the Biden administration's people that were actually doing the prosecution. So it's not like this is a surprise.
I always thought this about that. I thought that they had to go after Hunter because they wanted to go after Trump, and they had to show this impartiality.
You know what? I think that's out the door, too. But it's a hard call, but I'll be honest with you. I think I disagree with y'all. I think that Biden had to put aside some of his familials in order to be a president because he's the president of the United States. We're out of time. Wow, that's a good one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Very much thank you to Jeff Poore from 1819 News. Dale Jackson writes for Yellowhammer. Both of them have their own radio stuff, FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile and on WVNN up in Huntsville. Love you guys. See you. Bye. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about Alabama, y'all. Alabama, this show. Whew, goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I got a Christmas tree behind me in the studio.
It did. The studio just got a lot more Christmassy.
Just a lot more. It's beginning to look. I'm not going to do that to you.
Yeah.
but yeah, the lovely Charlene is here decorating the studios and offices for Christmas, and we now have a Christmas tree right behind me in the studio if you're watching online. Little bitty old tree got decorated in the other room, and then I toted it in here during the break.
You know, I know you didn't do this at your house, but I appreciate the holding until after Thanksgiving to decorate the studio.
Stop it right now. Stop doing it
the right way.
Stop it. It is not the way it's supposed to work. We had Thanksmas at my house.
Thanksmas.
We did. We had Chrisgiving at our house or whatever. I don't know. Thanksmas. Yeah, all right. So that begs a question. I'll ask our audience right now. Is it kosher to decorate for Christmas before Thanksgiving? I say yes. I have to say yes because I'm married to the woman who decorates.
And she's within listening range.
And she is, and I'm defending her interest right now.
Listen, do whatever you want in your own house. But what drives me nuts is when they start putting up like the snowflakes like on the poles and stuff along the roads and like decorating the city. That's, you know, it's like there's this too early. It's preemptive here. But I did notice they have like this is my first time I've seen, what's the like the Galaxy of Lights almost sort of with the trees by the Coosa River down the road?
Yeah, that's actually the River Country Campground. It's a massive place on the river where you can bring your RVs and all. It's really nice, actually.
I saw for the first time 2 days ago driving by. It looks really, so like stuff like that, I'm not saying it looks bad, but like if you do it too early, it takes away the magic, Christmas spirit.
And dude, you haven't been to Nakalula Falls yet.
I have been there, not for Christmas though, no.
But for Christmas, it is pretty epic. I mean, the cars stream in there. You can ride the train around, look at the lights. All right, audience, Right Side Ruffians, how do y'all feel about this? Can you decorate for Christmas before Thanksgiving? I say yes. JP is concerned about it, but I think yes. And by the way, I'm also curious what y'all. I'm going to diverge from my dipper here, knowing full well that I'm about to spark a flame. But the two questions I've got then, can you decorate for Christmas before Thanksgiving? And the other question is, as a parent, was Joe Biden right also as a president to pardon his son for 10 years? I say no. You know what? And I'll poison the well a little bit. I spent a whole day on this the other day. It was a one-dipper day almost that day. But here's the thing. There's no reason in the world Joe Biden couldn't have asked for leniency for his son openly. There's no reason why Joe Biden couldn't say, I'm his dad and I love him and I'm asking for y'all to please consider and literally speak into the moment. He could do that. Well, he's a president of the United States. He can't. That's way too much weight. Is it? If you're talking about whether he's a dad and he should or should not pardon, then why can't a dad also do what any other dad would do at sentencing time? And don't we also know, by the way, that they were trying to work a sweetheart deal for him? Don't tell me that wasn't influenced. So I really believe there are other things he could have done that have been more dad-like. And I also believe that being a dad means not rescuing him from a life of bad behavior. And I don't say that lightly, because I wrestle with, okay, I love my kids. They're both adults and they are well-adjusted, highly productive, love the Lord, good family people, adults. I mean, I'm just so proud of my kids. They Charlene and I have said we raised kids better than us. But that being said, I look at it and think, okay, if there were 10 years of bad behavior, of illegal activity, and then the other part of this is, if he's a dad, because there's a big difference between being a father and being a dad, all right? Anybody can be a biological father. That's a question of biology, period. That's a question of, you know, the meeting of the cells, if you know what I'm saying. But it takes somebody special to be a dad. And a dad is not out there as the big guy taking money from his son. A dad is the one saying, I'm not going to be running for office again because my son needs me. And I also believe that he may have thought he was doing some things for me. And I'm gonna own up to that, and we're gonna work this out. A dad is the one who intervened in his son's life, not just enabled him to do more bad things. So it's the bottom line is it's tough. It's a tough call. But nobody really believes he's making a dad decision. That's just it. Nobody does. And if this had been a single instance, I think it'd be more believable. If we had a drug charge that his son was swept up in something and he had the power to rescue his son from that one bad decision, I think everybody would go, well, okay, but make him a better person. No, we didn't have that. I hereby acknowledge that my son has pleaded guilty to major crimes, and I now pardon him for anything and everything, even those things we don't know about, for an entire decade. That's not being a dad. That's being an enabler, a rescuer. And the text lines are blowing up. Is somebody on the phone? I just realized. I'm sorry. Brian from Huntsville's on the line. Brian, what are you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing okay. I'm just sitting here thinking about what you were talking about on two different aspects. But what did Joe Biden's dad do for him?
What I don't know. What are you saying?
It's a chain effect. I meant, did he teach him any morals or anything along those lines?
Great question. I mean, I don't know. Is it a generational thing? Yeah.
The other one is a comment that I just heard a moment ago is decorating on Thanksgiving kosher? I guess it all depends on the Thanksgiving dinner. Do they serve ham along with the turkey? Just a thought. Y'all have a good one.
Oh, you're getting way up in people's business now, man. All right, let me get a few text messages because they are now flowing in. Matthew from Trinity said, no, Biden should not have pardoned Hunter. Not sure if that was an intended pun, but it is definitely not kosher to decorate for Christmas before Thanksgiving. Okay. He said also a hot take, Jeremiah 10:3-4 says you're not supposed to decorate trees. Oh, stop it. Stop it right now. Stop it. Gary from Decatur says the whole person thing is not really a father-son thing. It's insurance protecting the Obama administration, of which Biden was clearly a part of the corruption in Ukraine and China. Okay. TL from Huntsville says the Christmas spirit came early this year with a Trump miracle election win after a miracle missed assassination attempt. I'm for Thanksgiving usually, so as not to take away from giving thanks, but this year is the exception. That's nice. John from Huntsville says, I don't care when you put up your decorations. In fact, I don't even put up decorations because it's a lot more fun to watch other people put up decorations. Also, I'd love to watch JP hang some awesome Christmas sports decorations.
You know, at our house, we actually have, I mean, you probably could have guessed, is we have a lot of sports-themed ornaments on our tree.
I feel certain.
Yeah, so there's a lot of those on our tree at the Platt House.
Outstanding. Dave from Monrovia says, no on decorating, and Joe was wrong. Not for doing it, for lying about it when he knew he would pardon him all along, but Joe just can't help but lie. Okay. Mike from Florence says, I told my son if he was guilty as charged, he would sit in jail. If he was unfairly charged or sentencing, I'd do everything I could for him. And then Christmas before Thanksgiving depends on the circumstances. Many don't see their families on Christmas like they do on Thanksgiving. Interesting point. Now, I will say this. Charlene decorates pretty extensively. I mean, our house has got lots of, if you know what I mean, good stuff. It's beautiful. But, you know, why do that for just a period of a few weeks and then take it all down again? I will say this. New Year's Day, she's like, take it all down. John N. from Huntsville says, Phil, Hunter is obviously conscience-free in all dimensions. There's no recognition of an illegitimate child, no recognition of his obligations to his family, no obligation to his oath as a naval officer, no obligations the rest of us have to pay citizen taxes, and on and on. Wow. Wow. That's John. By the way, Rangers lead the way, he says. And thank you, John, for your service, and always appreciate you. By the way, that's John with the Elm Foundation. Great point. I'd forgotten, you know what? We should tie that together. I'd forgotten all about the not acknowledging his illegitimate child. By the way, illegitimate. What a horrible thing to say. Not acknowledging his child. How about that? The child is literally the victim in this right now, not being recognized by their father. And no recognition of his obligations to his family. You're right. Basically he's got, and, oh, by the way, don't forget the fact that he married his sister-in-law. How weird. You remember that part? Did you remember that?
Yes. So, and that's just, yeah.
I mean, the guy's just, he does not need to be rescued from all of his stuff all the time.
Very troubled individual that does not need to be. I feel like everybody grasps that.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, like all that is true. Obstruction of justice and the fact that Hunter was able to slime his way out of being held accountable. All that is 100% true. Everybody knows that. But also, if I was in that situation, which I don't have any kids yet, I plan to have some one day. But
like lots,
yeah,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I kind of agree with what Jeff said in the sense of, you know, it'd be hard in that situation knowing you could do something to help him and then don't. Not saying it's right or wrong, but I feel like a lot of people who are in that position would, you know, if you're in the shoes of being in that position, may make a different decision when you have your own kid in the game. Not saying it's right, not saying all that stuff isn't true, but I think there's a lot of people that would still pardon their own kid, even if they're saying Joe Biden wouldn't. That's just my take.
Well, I mean, look at the conversation with Jeff and Dale, two guys who I respect, mm-hmm. and they both saying I'd pardon my kid, and I'm saying me personally, I would pardon my kid, but I wouldn't feel comfortable pardoning a Hunter Biden style kid.
Yeah.
That's a kid who's still going to kill. He's going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
That's a kid who's been so rescued for so many years over so many different avenues and never held accountable for anything that he's going to wind up killing somebody. And they're going to go, well, I guess somebody should have stepped in at some point and actually fixed something.
And obviously if they're in the position where the kid disgraced the family and like the relations aren't very good, that's obviously a different story. And you know, it's such a hard discussion because so many people have different feelings on this stuff. But I don't know. It's not. Me saying that does not mean I'm not any less annoyed that Hunter Biden slimed his way out of being held accountable. Obviously, that's annoying. But it's just such a complicated and complex situation. If anybody was in that situation, I think they would maybe think twice. You know,
I think it was not complicated. Pam from Locust Fork and I agree. You can decorate before Thanksgiving. Pam from Locust Fork says, as for decorations, yes. And then as for this, you know, the pardon of Hunter, no. Says Joe Biden has not taught him to take responsibility for his actions. Will Hunter look to his dad when he stands before Christ? Joe can't bail him out then. Whew. Ken from Rimlap says, I think the pardon was to protect Joe more than Hunter. Maybe. And maybe even more than Joe. Barry from Athens says, I believe that Joe Biden had not pardoned Hunter. If and when President Trump pardons the J6 people, he'd have probably shown that he's a better person than Biden and pardoned Hunter then. And you know what? Everybody would have gone, wow. But it wouldn't have been a dad who once again raised a guy who has shown no evidence of being anything less than a sociopath being rescued one more time. Brian S. from Huntsville says, Christmas season in November. Christmas season is November 1st through January 7th. It's too short as it is. Everybody should decorate early so we can enjoy it longer. There you have it. November 1st. And Charlene's in the next room. She yelled, yeah.
I can't agree. I can't disagree with that.
And I'll tell you what's going to happen. Charlene's going to walk in here and say, I say what I say. And when she says that, I got nothing left. I say, listen, I'm just going to say right now, JP, look at me. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you like I told my kids, like I told my son, boy, don't marry a sassy woman. And what did he do? He married a sassy woman. And now his wife will look at him and say, I say what I say. And that's all there is to it. All right, we're taking a break right now. We'll take that break. We'll come right back. I got a few more. Oh, I got a lot more. Good Lord, the text messages blew up. I didn't even see all these down here.
We struck a nerve.
Holy cow. Okay, we're going to get them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. By the way, is it Robbie? Yeah, Robbie from Aniana says, I say decorate whenever you feel like it. If that's what you like, go for it. You do you, brother.
Awesome. Hey, Phil, by the way.
Yeah.
You know who's on the line, right?
Holy cow. Holy cow. Really?
Yeah.
Great. So much loved in the family. Your grandmother, yep. My stepmom, everybody calls her Granny Ram. Granny Ram, are you on the phone right now?
I am on the phone. I've been listening to you while I've been driving home from seeing my brand new great-grandson.
Wow.
And,
wow.
I was listening to that discussion about Biden. Now, we know,
You
all know as well as most people in the country know that Joe Biden was an honest, upright, transparent. What else could we say?
I don't know, but none of it rings true, Mom.
Very, very, very capable man. So he would never lower himself to lying about pardoning Hunter. But he thought that Harris was going to win.
Oh, yeah.
And Harris could pardon him.
You're saying Kamala had the pardon paper in her hands and then it went away.
That's not quite how it worked out.
No, not at all. By the way, just in case anybody's wondering, my stepmom on the phone right now is a longstanding member of the Republican Women. So I don't think that she's... Hey.
And I know, that it'd be a real hard time for me to vote otherwise.
Yeah, I think it'd be a hard time for you to vote otherwise, no matter what. Well, so, hey, by the way, how was that new great-grandbaby? How was little Thomas doing?
Well, that new great-grandbaby was all right. I didn't get to hold him because great-grandparents come way down the line in priorities. And so his grandmother had him. Yes.
Well, I tell you what, you call into this show anytime and we'll give you priority. How about that?
I've got you. I've enjoyed listening to you today.
Isn't JP doing a good job?
Good evening. I think you're doing a good job.
I think we'll keep him.
That's the only step of approval I need.
That's good.
We love
and
you.
I've got fudge in the refrigerator.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We're heading up.
I'll be up tomorrow if that's the case.
All right.
I love you both.
Love you too. See ya. We need her to call it. We just have a Granny Ram segment. Can we do that? Can we have a sound effect? What sound effect will we have a Granny Ram called in more often?
I don't know. She should probably choose her own sound effect.
I'm going to tell you right now, every Right Side ruffian would want to adopt her. She would be everybody's Granny Ram at that point.
Yeah.
Brand new in the text lines. By the way, that was awesome. That was great. That was good. Brand new in the text lines is Ian from Hartsell. Ian, we are glad you were there. And what did he send us? A meme? He says, for every Christmas tree lit before Thanksgiving, an elf drowns a baby deer. Maybe reindeer. Stop it. That is awful. No.
Now I got that on your conscience, that elf drowned the baby deer because he had a tree up in your
house. I don't have that on my conscience at all. I do not. Kimball from Harvest says, the long one. He says, Joe Biden should not have pardoned Hunter. A righteous dad teaches his children to keep the commandments till they're written on their hearts. He does not shield him from the consequences of his action. He encourages them to face their punishment with courage and welcomes them back once the punishment's been served. B, Thanksgiving is its own holiday and Christmas decorations go up immediately thereafter. Just my opinion. Kimball from Harvest. Kimball, thank you. Thank you. John from Huntsville has the grades. Pray tell, what can they be? Dale and Jeff get an A-plus for their equally amazing performances. Phil gets an A-double-plus for his magnificent performance. However, today's winner is obviously JP with an A-triple-plus for his absolutely sensational performance. Congratulations. By the way, he says, I'm the one who brought up Nick Saban earlier. I did not deduct a single point off anybody's grade for continuing to talk about Nick Saban afterwards.
That's only fair.
And then Brian from Huntsville says, when Granny Ram calls in, we ought to have a sound that says, oh, bless their heart.
Maybe Kay Ivey saying that, from that commercial.
I can almost see that. It's a high step up. I can do a Kay Ivey impression. John G. from Huntsville says, Joe lied about the pardon because he never thought he would have to pardon him. He never expected to face an honest judge. He expected the corrupt system to let Hunter off the hook. I would say yes. And then Joe from Indiana says, I had a tree of perpetual joy, a fully decorated tree in the family room that stayed up all year. Nah, that's too much, brother. We can't go down the all-year tree. All right, that's it. Listen, there are indeed more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.